You're listening to the Courageous Life Podcast, helping you develop courage and resilience in a perilous and unpredictable world. This is your host, Sean Mitzel. I'm coming to you from the mountains of northern Idaho. I'm glad you're with us.
Since 2003, Sylvia Bernstein has dedicated herself to connecting people and plants through indoor, soilless gardening products. She is especially passionate about bringing the super productive gifts of hydroponics and now aquaponics to mainstream families and schools across America. As part of that ongoing journey, she founded and is the president of the Aquaponic Source and is the award-winning author of Aquaponic Gardening, a step-by-step guide to growing fish and vegetables together, an Amazon.com gardening number one bestseller. She also runs the Aquaponic Gardening Community, North America's largest online community site dedicated to aquaponic gardening, and is a feature writer for Maximum Yield magazine. In her recent past, Sylvia was the VP of Marketing and Product Development for AeroGrow International, the makers of the Aero Garden. She was one of the company's original founders and was instrumental in developing plant growth technology. Sylvia has a degree in agricultural economics from the University of California, Davis, and an MBA from the University of Chicago. She currently lives in Boulder, Colorado, with her husband, Alan. So, Sylvia, thank you for being with us. We really appreciate your time and your expertise in this area. I know a lot of my listeners are interested in this area. They're interested in self-sufficiency, producing their own food, and what a great way aquaponics. And if we could start, could you just tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got into aquaponics?
Yeah, you bet. So the way I got into this is it sort of started back when I had little kids at home and I discovered gardening. I loved gardening. I hadn't really before I had the kids, mainly because it was something for me to do during nap time.
Okay.
It kind of kept me close to the house and I could have the kids nearby and we could all be out in the yard together. And that really took off as a passion for me.
Okay.
To the point where, to me, when I knew it was almost getting out of control was when my husband gave me a floodlight for Christmas so I could keep gardening at night.
Very cool.
So when the kids got a little older and it was time for me to go back to work full time, I saw an ad for a local company here that was just getting started called AeroGrow International. And AeroGrow is the maker of the AeroGarden kitchen countertop hydroponic garden.
Okay.
And so they were looking for a grow lab manager for their hydroponic system. This was back in 2001. I honest to God had to look up the term hydroponics because I had never heard of it. And I applied and they took me in and I started the grow lab for them, ran that for a few years, got really involved in product development, especially around the plants. My specialty was always working with the plants and the plant growing technology, especially the seed kits with AeroGrow.
Okay.
And eventually I became the VP of product development and marketing for them. So I was with them for 7 years. And while I was there, one of the things that we were always looking for was a hydroponic nutrient.
Right.
An organic nutrient. Organics in hydroponics is kind of tough to pull off. In hydroponics, you don't really have all the microbial life in there that is required in order to break down organic matter and make it available to the plants.
Okay.
So because of that, the organic nutrients that were out there that were available at the time were either expensive or not very effective or just plain stinky.
Okay.
So we were constantly trying to figure this out. A lot of us weren't real comfortable with the chemical nature of hydroponics. And in that pursuit, we came across this thing called aquaponics, which kind of blew me away when I first heard about it. The notion that it could be as simple as fish waste providing most of the nutrients for your plants was just beautiful in its simplicity.
Right.
And so I thought it was pretty cool, but I was also kind of skeptical because it just seemed a little too easy. And so fortunately, a friend of mine had at work decided to set up an aquaponics system in his basement. And he checked it out and he said, wow, this really works. And so finally one day I went down and checked out what was going on, and I was amazed at what he had happening down there. And that was about 6 years ago.
Excellent.
Took about 6 months for me to quit my job and get into aquaponics full time. So okay. We started our company 5 years ago in early November. The aquaponics person, we've been going strong ever since.
Very cool. So that is obviously aquaponic source, correct?
Yes, the aquaponic source.
Okay, the aquaponic source. Got it. And what is the kind of the range of services and products that you offer?
Well, our whole focus is on home and school aquaponic gardeners. So our mission is really to be a one-stop shop for what they need,
okay. Which
we categorize into educational materials. I wrote a book on aquaponics. We have videos. We have an online course. We've created school curricula. And then full systems. We have our Aquabundance line that actually grows full-size fish, food fish, large plants, all the way down to our Aqua Mini line, which is more countertop, small systems.
Okay.
We also have aquaponic supplies that we've sort of divided into build your system and grow your system. We carry everything from all the plumbing parts and pumps and bulkheads and things like that you would need to build a system, heaters, to some of the live supplies. We have live fish. We carry a line of seeds, all sorts of seed starting stuff, fish food, and some of the supplements that you would need for aquaponics. So we provide all of that.
Got it. So you're really the whole nine yards.
Yeah. Okay. We've got about 900 products in our product line.
Wow.
And we're developing new products all the time.
Very cool. Hey, I tell you what, let's step back just a little bit. Could you explain the difference between aquaponics, hydroponics, and aquaculture?
Yes, happy to. So aquaponics is really a subset of both hydroponics and aquaculture. Hydroponics is just the notion of growing plants without soil. That is the short technical definition of hydroponics. So you're growing in a substrate that is not soil. All of the nutrients for the plants are being provided by the water, and the nutrients are mixed into the water somehow.
Okay.
Aquaponics is a specialized subset of that uses fish waste to provide the nutrients for the plants. So aquaponics necessarily is fish-based, and it's necessarily recirculating, meaning that the water gets pumped from the fish tank to the planting beds, and then it comes back to the fish cleaned.
Okay.
That's how aquaponics is sort of a subset of aquaculture. What if you want to view the whole arrangement from the fish side of the equation, what the plants are providing is filtration. So on the hydroponic side, the fish are providing food. On the aquaculture side, the plants are providing filtration.
Got it.
So aquaculture is just, it's growing fish in captivity. But you have to filter out the waste somehow.
Right.
In aquaponics, we're actually using that filtered waste to grow plants.
Sure. And then, you know, when we think of farm-raised fish, usually that's aquaculture, and usually that's a pretty poor model that requires a whole lot of inputs. Is that correct?
Yeah, it does. A lot of energy in that filtration. And normally they are actually draining off about 10% of the water daily to knock down some of that waste level. And you've got whatever is filtered out of the water, somehow you've got to get rid of that.
Right.
So that becomes a sort of a waste output. If you attach grow beds onto that, that waste output gets used productively.
Got it. Now, one of the great advantages of aquaponics is it uses much less water. Is that correct?
Yes. It uses much less water than either of those two disciplines and soil. And that goes back to the whole recirculate the ocean. So because the water that I'm using is just circulating through my grow bed and back to the fish tank, the only water that you lose is whatever the plants take up and transpire off their leaves and what might evaporate off the top of your tank if you don't have your tanks covered. As opposed to hydroponics, where usually every 2 to 4 weeks you need to get rid of all of your nutrient solution because it gets out of balance and you start over with a fresh batch of nutrient solution. That uses a lot of water.
Right.
And aquaculture, as I said, they're getting rid of about 10% of the water every day. And when you think about soil agriculture, agriculture in this country, in most places in this country, uses 80 to 90% of the water that is used in an area. So if you think about it, I just heard a really interesting story on NPR yesterday about water use. And the guy was basically saying, you know, look, all of us that are trying to shut off our water while we're brushing our teeth or whatever,
right,
it is literally a teeny tiny drop in the bucket compared to what agriculture uses. Well, again, because of this recirculating nature, aquaponics, it's been estimated, uses less than 10% of the water of soil agriculture.
Wow.
So really important concept going forward with climate change and all the issues that we're facing.
Okay. Yeah, that's fascinating. So I know I've heard something about aquaponics, and see if you can educate me on this. I've heard that the microbial activity that normally occurs in soil and that what the fish waste is providing for the plants can actually develop to some degree in the medium in aquaponics. Is that accurate?
The bacterial, the microbial.
Yeah.
Well, bacteria is super important to the whole process. There's, because this is an organic system, there's actually all kinds of microbial activity going on, and fungi and that type thing, mycelium. But the most important are two bacteria that are called nitrifying bacteria, and their whole role in this system is to take the ammonia-based fish waste that's toxic to the fish and relatively useless to the plants and convert that waste first into nitrites, which are still a big problem, and then into nitrates, which are the basis for this beautiful nitrogen fertilizer that the plants take up. And they're also relatively harmless to the fish. You really need to get in extremely high levels for nitrates to be a big problem for the fish.
Okay.
So though it's that bacteria, the nitrifiers, that are just so critical to aquaponics working. Without them, the whole process wouldn't work at all.
Okay. All right. And, you know, that leads me to my next question, was how do you maintain the balance between the fish and the plants, you know, the nitrites and the nitrates?
You know, you don't. Mother Nature just sort of steps in and does it for you.
Okay.
That's kind of what's so beautiful here. It's, you know, it's funny that the people that are the most challenged in picking up something like aquaponics are people that come from generally the hydroponic side of the equation, because they're so used to having pinpoint control over,
right,
what's happening in the system.
Okay.
And an aquaponic system is much more similar to an organic soil garden.
Okay.
Where, you know, when you look at your organic soil garden, you don't really worry about keeping the whole thing in balance, right? It just sort of happens.
Absolutely.
That's as long as you don't overload it, you don't overplant. You know, there's definitely some rule of thumb, but you don't spend a lot of time worrying about the content
of the soil. We just add organic material and more organic material to our garden beds and just keep going and let it all work itself out.
Exactly. Yeah, and in aquaponics, we call that feeding our fish.
Yeah, okay.
So that's adding organic matter into the system.
Well, you know, that raises a great question. And earlier you were talking about one of the systems that you guys sell. It basically is a medium for growing food for the fish. Is that right?
No, not really. I mean, we sell a couple different lines of feed for the fish.
Okay, I gotcha.
I thought
you were going to get into the maybe like trying to grow duckweed or something like that to help feed the fish or offset.
You can certainly do that for sure. Duckweed is great. Water lettuce. What we find with our tilapia is they actually love any kind of lettuce.
Okay.
Any kind of leafy greens. Boy, they're like piranhas.
Gotcha.
You know, sometimes people will grow black soldier fly larvae for their worm, for their fish, composting worms. There's lots of things you can grow to feed your fish.
Okay. All right. Now, you know, I see on your guys' site that most of the fish that you offer are tilapia.
Mm-hmm.
What are some other species that people can grow, or why did you... Why are you guys focusing on tilapia?
There's a few reasons for that. One is just the practical reality that's what the hatchery that we're working with sells.
Okay.
They have tried to ship other kinds of fish, bluegill and catfish, namely, and found that they were just really hard to ship successfully.
Okay.
Especially the catfish, because believe it or not, catfish have such spiny fins that they were busting the bags that held the air in the water.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, that's kind of hard to
ship. Three layers of bag. We still couldn't successfully ship catfish because they just kept puncturing them. So,
okay.
So that's kind of part of it. So really, tilapia are just easy. They're super hardy fish. I mean, just crazy hardy, way hardier than goldfish. And a lot of that's because of their evolution. They came from brackish lakes in Africa. So their expectation of water quality and oxygenation in their water is pretty low.
Okay.
So that makes them really easy to ship and really easy to grow. I have walked into our showroom here, and there's been a tilapia on the floor drying out. He'd been out that long. And I flopped him right back into the tank, and he was perfectly fine.
Wow. That's resilience.
So, yeah. I mean, I don't recommend doing that.
Right.
But it just, you know, it just goes to show. So that's kind of a nice benefit of tilapia. Another is that they grow relatively fast for aquaculture fish. You can get from fingerling size up to plate size, which is considered to be about 12 inches or a pound and a half.
Okay.
You can do that in, we generally say a year. If you really pushed it, you could do it in 9 months. But that's perfect conditions and feeding them many times a day and all that. So for most backyard gardeners or schools, you're going to see them grow out in about a year.
Okay.
They will also reproduce really readily in captivity. Obviously, assuming that you have males and females.
Right.
And I'm not saying that just to be facetious. A lot of the fingerlings that you get out there have been sex changed so that they're all male. So you do have to make sure that you get male-female, but as long as you do that, and the conditions are right. That has to do with day length and temperature and pH. They will reproduce right there in the tank. So, for example, we have not bought tilapia for many, many years here.
Really?
Yeah. We're, you know, you just see this tiny little school of fish go swimming by, and you just net it out of the tank and throw it into an aquarium, and you're good to go.
Awesome. So you probably have a pretty sustainable system going over there.
Yeah, it's sort of perpetual.
Excellent.
Every so often, we're giving away fish, which is actually what we're doing right now. So,
you know, I'm going to be a little bit selfish here. Have you guys ever worked with trout? I love trout.
Have. Oh, yeah. And we get asked that question a lot.
Okay.
When I first built my first big aquaponic system in our greenhouse at home, I had this grand plan that I was going to have one system that was going to be my cold water system. That was going to have trout. And then the other system was the warm water system, and that was going to have tilapia. And in the cold water system, I would grow spring and fall plants that liked a little cooler soil.
Right.
And the warmer midsummer plants in the warm water system. The challenge with that is that trout are a little more advanced fish to grow.
Okay.
They are the exact opposite of all those things I was saying about tilapia.
Okay.
When you think about where you would typically find trout, they tend to be in sort of cold, fresh, snow melt running streams.
Right.
They like the water real cold. They like it very clean, and they like it highly oxygenated and with a current.
Okay.
So a little harder to pull off in your backyard greenhouse.
Right.
Not so much because it's of the winter, but the summer. It's much more difficult to cool water down than it is to heat it. So I definitely grew these fish for a while, and then I just got so tired of being stressed out about them. I actually gave them to a friend of mine that had an aquaponic system where he was growing trout. We had picked up our trout at the same time. His trout were bigger than mine, though, because he had left his system outside in the winter, and they just had grown bigger. So when I gave him my fish, his fish ate all my fish.
Oh, no. Okay.
So it was a very expensive snack. So, you know, that's kind of my experience with trout is you can absolutely grow aquaponically with them. It's just a lot more challenging. The fish are more challenging. The fact that the water's cooler is more challenging. And that's mainly because back to those nitrifying bacteria that I was telling you about, they will multiply at the fastest rate the warmer the water gets,
up
to about 85 degrees. So their sweet spot is from about 72 to 85 degrees. Well, trout don't like being above 65 degrees.
Okay,
got it. Now I've got really slow production of bacteria. And I'm also growing plants that, you know, there's very few plants that actually grow in soil with the soil that cold. Lettuces, spinach, broccoli, snow peas. You're pretty limited in the plants that you're going to grow real successfully in a cold system like that. So for all those reasons, yes, it's possible. It's a little more advanced technique, and I sure wouldn't recommend it right out of the gate.
Okay. Well, that's great information. So maybe for the first-timer, you start with tilapia and maybe advance to something like trout.
Well, and there's lots of other fish that you could do, too. Catfish, for sure. Perch, hybrid striped bass, bluegill.
Okay.
Those are all great fish, too. And we've been doing a lot of mixing and matching with fish. And we've discovered that catfish are really awesome for keeping the tank clean.
Okay.
And so we've gotten to where we just put a couple catfish in all of our big tanks. And we put a few goldfish in all of our sump tanks because we have had a problem with snails. And it ends up goldfish will just go through and eat the snails. You can have a lot of fun with fish.
Okay, yeah, that sounds great. You got that symbiotic relationship between fish and plants, but then you also have multiple types of fish doing multiple functions. That's
exactly
great. Very cool. Now, if the small backyard gardener is trying to raise some of his or own food. How much would a small system cost? Just kind of starting out.
Small food growing system. You want to have at least 100 gallons on the tank in order to really be able to successfully grow plate-sized fish. And my first question is, are you a do-it-yourselfer or not? If you are the type of person that half the fun is in the doing, then you're going to be able to do it much less expensively than somebody that would like to have a prefabricated system delivered to them.
Okay.
That, you know, goes with so many things. And if you are a DIYer and you don't mind sort of scavenging for recycled parts, a lot of people are using IBC totes, for example. That stands for intermediate bulk container, and that's those plastic shipping containers that have sort of wire frame around them.
Okay.
You can find one of those for usually $100, and that makes a perfectly good aquaponic system. So at that point, if you're going that route, you just need to cut off the top third. Keep it in the frame and flip it over, and the bottom 200 gallons is your fish tank, and the top part is your grow bed, and, you know, plumb it up and pump water back and forth, and, you're good to go.
Awesome.
So you can do that. I would say probably the cheapest you can do something like that, maybe $150, assuming you use gravel for the media, and you buy an inexpensive pump. Yeah, $125 to $150.
Okay.
But again, that's for somebody that really likes to do that sort of thing and doesn't care a whit about aesthetics or, you know,
right.
You're okay with having a sawed off plastic storage container in your environment.
Right.
A lot of people aren't, and a lot of people would really prefer to have something that they know is going to work and that's guaranteed and has been developed by people that have been doing this for a while.
Right.
Delivered to them and done that way. And those are the kind of people that we're generally serving.
Right. Okay. Now, in that example that you gave us with, you know, no matter what the system looks like or how the system was obtained, say 200 gallons, what is a rule of thumb for how many fish you can raise in something like that?
The easy rule of thumb is about a pound of fish to every 5 to 10 gallons of water.
Okay.
So in a 200-gallon system like that, that would be, about 20 to 40 fish. And when you first start out, you're not really, when you're getting fingerlings, you're not really thinking in terms of pounds of fish.
Right.
So when you first start out, I recommend just thinking of one fish to every 5 gallons of water. So in 200 gallons like that, that means you would start with about 40 fish. If you order them off our website, we've got them in 15, 20, 50s, and 75s.
Okay.
So of that grouping, I'd recommend that you order 50 fish. You're going to lose some of them along the way. You know,
okay.
they're living things, and in a year, some aren't going to make it.
Okay.
And so that'll get you to just about, maybe a little bit overstocked, but just about to where you want to be. And if you find that you're overstocked because your nitrate levels get too high, then, you either have a fish fry,
right,
or you find a friend of yours that has, you've talked into getting into aquaponics, and you hand the fish off to them.
Okay. All right. That sounds great. I mean, that's a pretty good rule of thumb, easy to follow. Is there a standard loss rate? Is it 10% or, you know, not standard, but kind of a range? Are you going to lose about 10% of your fish?
It's so hard to say. I guess that's probably a reasonable. I mean, some people have a tragedy and they lose them all, and some people rarely lose any. But I'd say if you don't have a tragedy, maybe about 10%.
Okay.
Now, every so often, a fish will just die for just, it seems like, no particular reason.
Got it. Mystery.
yeah, and it always seems to happen when they're younger, too. I don't know what that is. We've had some pretty old fish in our systems that just, you know, they're at least a couple years old, and they just keep cranking.
Yeah, that's great. How can people learn more about aquaponics? Particularly, you mentioned that you wrote a book, you have an online course. Could you tell us a little bit more about that?
Sure. So my book is called Aquaponic Gardening, A Step-by-Step Guide to Growing Fish and Vegetables Together. And that's on our website. We've got our store site is called theaquaponicsstore.com. And if you go there and look for the book, it's there. It's the best-selling aquaponic book in the world now. It's sold about 60,000 copies.
Awesome.
And it's a good starting place. We developed our online course, which is a 5.5-hour long course broken up into, I think there's 36 10-minute segments. That's done through udemy.com, but you can also get that off of our website. And that was designed to be a companion with the book.
Okay.
So it's structured in the same way as the book, but obviously it sort of brings the book to life because it's got visuals. So
right.
Now I can actually show you what I'm talking about in the book. We have some videos out if you're more of a drop a DVD in type of person as opposed to wanting to do something online. And we teach live courses here at our facility in Longmont, too. So usually one weekend a month, we're teaching something. So our next one coming up is our immersion class, which is a 2-day long class, and we go through everything. It's just a complete fire hose in 2 days.
Okay.
And there's a lot of hands-on. So
right.
We're actually building systems. You're working with plants. You're looking for insects. We're testing water. So that's a lot of fun. And, it's people really seem to enjoy that a lot. And a lot of making one of these classes, too, that's so great is that you meet people from all over the country that are getting involved in this. So usually people go home with an email list and stay in touch. So those are our main education tools. And then we do have school curricula as well.
Okay. Very cool.
So, yeah.
That's awesome. Hey, one more question for you.
Yeah.
For the homesteader, the family that wants to grow all their own food,
yes.
How what would you recommend to them if they were like, hey, is this something that we should do, is aquaponics something that we should pursue to grow a portion or maybe a significant portion of uh-huh. their protein? What would be your advice to them?
My strong advice is to start with good educational material. Find somebody that you can trust and devour all their educational material. Because what so many people do these days is just start poking around on the internet, and there's a lot of really conflicting and even wrong information that's out there. So
okay.
You're only going to be successful if you really find a good source of information. That's advice number one. Advice number two is don't overstock. The biggest mistake that I see people make is that they get all excited about this and then they start overstocking. And that is a recipe for disaster. You end up with all sorts of problems when you're overstocked. Your system will get out of balance. Your fish won't be healthy. Your plants won't be healthy. You'll have insect issues. It's just a bad idea. Those are really the key. You are going to have to pay some attention to it. Don't do this if you think that you're going to be going on vacation for a month. You know, it's something that you're raising live animals. Those are really the main things.
Well, that was very helpful. Thank you very much. That is great advice. Basically, get good information and start slow.
Yes.
Okay.
Exactly.
Awesome.
Exactly.
Well, I think that's about it. Once again, thank you. That was a great primer and a lot of demystification on aquaponics for sure for me. So I want to thank you for that. And do you have any final words or final thoughts on aquaponics or anything else for anyone out there looking at this?
My biggest thing that I want to say is just get out there and try it for sure, especially if you are into having fish as part of your diet. You know, there's so much with homesteading now involved with chickens and with goats, and all of those things are fantastic. But if you also want fish, there is a way to do it where you are in complete control of the fish from start to finish. You know what it's eaten, you know how it's been raised, you know how fresh it is, and it's not that hard, and it's completely within your grasp.
What a great way to end. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Appreciate it, Sean. This has been great.
Awesome. Our scripture for today comes from Romans chapter 8, verses 1 through 3. There is, therefore, now no condemnation for those who are in Christ Jesus. For the law of the Spirit of life has set you free in Christ Jesus from the law of sin and death. For God has done what the law, weakened by the flesh, could not do, by sending his own Son in the likeness of sinful flesh, and for sin, he condemns sin in the flesh.
This concludes today's podcast. Thanks for listening. Please visit us on our website, thecourageouslifepodcast.com. We'd appreciate any comments or questions that you have. And also like us on Facebook, The Courageous Life Podcast. Semper Fidelis and Soli Deo Gloria.